What I'd like to cover today is a sugya that deals with the concept that we mentioned earlier of zenene vezelo chaser. And those are situations in which we'll call him Reuven and Shimon. Reuven, on his own initiative, uninvited, plants himself down in the chatzer of Shimon. And Reuven lives there. And Shimon, in this case, suffers no loss. And that's called a chatzer sheino medes l'schirus. In other words, he had no intention to put it on the market for rental purposes. So then, on the one hand, you know, Reuven is a squatter. You know, he has no rights to move into Shimon's property and live there. On the other hand, Shimon didn't suffer any loss. And the issue is, how do you view this? You know, what perspective should we look at? From one perspective, the owner of the chatzah, we'll call him Shimon, has the right to charge Reuven for the benefits that Reuven enjoyed. That's called hanah. You know, Reuven enjoyed a tovus hanah from Shimon. He should pay for that. On the other perspective, although Reuven enjoyed a benefit, and he has hanah, Shimon didn't suffer any loss. So how do we view this? So the Gemara earlier in Masechta Bava Kamma, Daf Yutes, vacillates back and forth. And there are two opinions on this issue. The final conclusion is that he doesn't have to pay him. What does it mean? That although Shimon had a benefit from Reuven's chatzer by living in the chatzer, nevertheless Reuven on a monetary level does not have the ability to demand compensation or rental fees from Shimon, and in a court of law the case will be thrown out of court. However, let's keep the following issue in mind, and it's going to come up here in our sugya of Rav Yosef and Rava. Although on a monetary financial level there's no room for Reuven the plaintiff to sue for damages and force Shimon to pay, but nevertheless on a moral level, Shimon had no right, uninvited, to come into the chatzah of Reuven and decide to enjoy the benefit of it. That's called in the Lashon HaShas, Shoel Shalom Midas Gazlan Hev. I have no right to take an object of yours, use it for my own purposes, usurp it, even if it means that you suffer no loss. Lo mi boy, if I take your object and I damage it, that's called a mazik. Lo mi boy, if I take your object and I have no intention of returning it, that's called a gazlan. But even in the case of a shoel shalom midas, such that the nishal, the bailim, suffered no loss whatsoever, there was no damage, even in that case, there is a moral violation, and there's going to be a great controversy as to whether or not Shimon, on a moral level, should be paying Reuven damages because he was responsible for taking, without permission, Reuven's object. And that's called a chiyuv bedin shamayin. Although bedinei adam, in court, Reuven does not have the recourse to sue Shimon for damages, or even to sue him for rental fees, but nevertheless, it could be that Shimon on his own initiative would have to pay Reuven in order to do a kind of a tshuva process. That's called a chiyuv bedin shamayin. Yeah?
But if you go with that, that there's not that except for a moral basis, that there he doesn't owe you anything, that would destroy Yiskar entirely. Because it doesn't matter, even if you're selling something, let's say you're selling something, and you're selling, of course, with a profit, because that's all you're in business. I take the object, leave the wholesale value of it.
But who are you? You're the buyer or the seller? I lost you.
I'm just walking to your place.
You walk into my place.
You're selling a safer there. Selling for $10. It costs $5 to print it. Okay? I know it costs $5 to print it. I grab your safer. I leave you $5 on there. And I walk out. You say, Zenezevelofasser. You didn't lose anything. After all, I gave you your overhead.
If you had intention of stealing it, you're a goslin.
But why? Zenin and
Vizilo Chasser. No, Zenin and Vizilo Chasser is in the case of someone who's a renter, but not a gazlan. Meaning, he's not intending to remove the owner from his object on a personal permanent basis. Okay. He's only using it for the interim, and he's using it in a way that the owner of the object doesn't suffer any loss. He had no intention. Like, let's say, for example, getting closer to our sugya. Let's say you own an evet. Can I take that evet and have him do malacha for me? Well, if you could have done malacha with him at that point, that malacha has a value to it, has an objective market value, then clearly I'm taking that away from you. But if on the other hand, let's say the evet during certain periods of time, let's say, I'm just going to throw out numbers here, let's say out of 365 days in a year, there are 100 days that he doesn't work. Right. You know, they sowed and they planted and they're waiting for the produce to grow in the field. So I don't have much for him to do. I mean, I could ask him to untie my shoes for me. I can ask him to give me a foot massage. You know, there are things I can do, but basically I can't keep this evet occupied. Somebody comes along and grabs the evet with no intention of stealing the evet, and he just wants to use it for his personal malacha during this time period, in which, in any event, he wouldn't be working for the owner of the malach. So we're going to see now in this sugya that the Gemara is going to start off with a premise that case is exactly like the case of zenene vezelo chaser. In other words, I'm in a sense renting your evet, employing your evet for my behalf. I'm getting a great deal of benefit from your evet. My belirishus. I'm definitely a shol shalomi das, that's for sure. In other words, on a moral level, according to that sheet that we mentioned before, I have no right to do such a thing. However, on a purely monetary level, in terms of you meaning the adon, the master, the owner of the evet, you have no financial claim, because it's clear cut, there's no debate about it, that you wouldn't have gotten any benefit from that effort at that particular period of time. It was that 100-day period in which you don't work the effort. And the plot grows thicker here if let's say the relationship, in other words, normally in the classical case of Zenen of Hizelo Chaser, there's no relationship between the owner of the Chaser and the squatter, except for the fact that he's squatting in the land. As far as we're concerned, they're total friend dimension. They're total strangers one to the other. That's the classical case. But what happens, and that's what our sugya is going to hone in on, when there is a very specific relationship between the nene and the lo chaser, meaning the nene and the baile, in which the nene is the malve, who has lent money to the master who owns the evet, who's the lo chaser, and now shall we apply the principle of what? Ribbis. Why should ribbis apply in this case? Ribbis means whenever the malva gets more than he bargained for. The malva extended a loan of 1,000, and at the end of the day, he collects 1,000 plus 100, 1,100. That extra 100 is called ribbis, and the Torah prohibits that under a separate lav in the Torah, maybe many, many different lavim, but certainly one lav at least. Shall we say that? And here's the question that our sugya poses. This is just the background. On the one hand, it wasn't that if the malve uses the evet of the lova, he gains something financially from the lova, because the proof of the pudding is the lova can't sue him for any sort of compensation. Why? Because it's zeneh v'zolos chosen. The malve used the evet for his purposes, for his malacha, during that 100-day period of time when the evet is not working for the master of the lova at all. On the other hand, you have to admit that from the perspective of the malve, although the lova doesn't have rights to demand payment for that malacha, and therefore say, well, that payment would indicate that the malva is getting more than what he lent the lova, right? Because let's say that payment would be worth 100, then the malva, in addition to getting back his piron, his reimbursement of the chov, he also has a value of malacha that could be marketed at 100. So he's getting 1,100 instead of 1,000. That itself is pure ribbis. But That's only from the perspective of what the malva is gaining over here. Here's a case where the malva is getting a benefit from his loan, above and beyond his loan, but the lova cannot be said to have given the malva any sort of extra payment above beyond the 1,000 that he borrowed, because that extra payment, the lova doesn't have any claim to. If he has no claim to it, then you can't say that the money went from the lova to the malva. In other words, the analysis here is the following. If the malva takes advantage of the evid of the lova, does that mean ipso facto that's called ribis? Because at the end of the day, the malva gets benefits from the lova, and those benefits go above and beyond the price, you know, the loan itself. That's called ribis. So that's from the perspective of the malva. Or shall we say, no, that ribis is contingent on the perspective of the lova. I'll give you an example. Let's say Reuven wants to borrow $1,000 from Shimon. Right, so Shimon's not allowed to take a payback of an extra 10 to that 1,000, right? But let's say Reuven, the lova, has a good buddy. We'll call him Levi. Levi comes over to Shimon, and he says, you know what, I can't extend $1,000 to Reuven. He's my good buddy. I really feel for him, but I just don't have the bucks. So you know what? Let me slip you a 10 or a 20 bill, and do me a favor and extend the loan. That would not be ribis. Why? Because did the money come from the lova to the malva?
No.
It didn't. It came from a third party. You know, if man comes from shamayim as a result of halva, that doesn't make it ribis. Ribis has to be built into the relationship between the malva and the lova. So from one perspective, I would say that it's legitimate for the malva to take advantage of the evid of the lova, and that's not called ribis, even though the malacha that this evid is doing on behalf of the malva is worth money on the market. But on the other hand, I could say that that's not ribis, although the malva is gaining, and he's getting more in this bargain than what he gave as a halva, but it's not coming from the lova. Why do I say it's not coming from the lova? Because the lova has no rights, has no recourse to convert that into money. Meaning that malacha, if you can isolate the malacha as a chefta, that chefta malacha is not, has no value to the lova. He doesn't have any access to it. He doesn't have any way of cashing it in. It's almost like, let's say the lova owned a lottery ticket which he had no rights to use for whatever reason. He was in the wrong group. And the malva was in the right group. So the fact that the malva takes advantage of this lottery ticket, he wins the lottery, that's not money that came from the lova to the malva, because the lova couldn't have gotten a dime. He couldn't have gotten a penny from that lottery ticket. Michael?
What is the connection? Where is the connection between the loan and the whole question of the evet?
So here's where the kasav ashlishi ayachmiya beineim comes in. Let me just reformulate Michael's question for my purposes. I hope I'm being loyal to your question. L'chora, there are only two variables here. There was a loan that took place between Reuven and Shimon, and now Shimon decides to take the evid of Reuven and during that 100-day period of time use it for his purposes, correct? What does that have to do with the fact that a week ago or a month ago Reuven lent money to Shimon? There are two episodes that took place. True, they both happened by coincidence to overlap in the same two personalities, but they're independent one of the other. There's no kesher, correct? There's no connection.
But on the other hand, he would have agreed to give him the
evidence. Excellent, beautiful. Here's
well,
the deal.
That's the question, isn't it?
Okay, wait, one second. We're trying to build up the variables so that when we go through this sugya inside, we'll have the tools to appreciate this sugya. Zev points out something very well. True, there is a halacha called Zeh Neneh V'Zeh Lo Chaser. But, you know, there's always a catch-22 clause. If you went ahead and you squatted in my chatzer And it wasn't the chutz that was omedes liagra. I couldn't have rented it out at that particular period of time. It wasn't designated for rental. It's true that I cannot sue you for compensation. You went ahead and you squatted in my land. What's done is done. The past is dead and buried. I have no recourse, I'm the owner of the chotzer, to sue you for damages or to sue you for rental. However, let's talk about mikan ulahaba. Forget about the past. What happens if Shimon now is about to set pitch tent in my chotzer, and it's during a 100-day period of time in which I cannot rent out the chotzer, I have no intention to rent out the chotzer. I have the right to give him the boot and to object and say to him, thanks but no thanks. I don't want you in my chutzah. Now this leads us to another sukkah, which we're not going to cover today and not even touch upon because it would require months of work. It's called Kofin al Midas Stom. Whenever there's a zen enezol chasev, although on the one hand legally the Bailam have a right to object, but on the other hand, there's something called Kofin al Midas Stom. And the question becomes whether or not, or when, under what conditions we apply the principle of Kofin al Midas Stom and when we don't. Let's assume, just to make life easy for ourselves, because we can't do all of Shas in one day, that the halach of Kofin al Midas Stom does not apply. If it doesn't apply, then Reuven the Lover, or Reuven the Baal HaChotzer, has a right to object to Shimon's usurping his Eved, no, whoever the Shimon is, or squatting in his Chotzer. In this case, why is Reuven inclined to look the other way, so to speak, and allow Shimon to abscond with his Eved and enjoy the benefits of his Eved?
Because of the loan.
That already touches on ribis, because that's called tovas hanna.
Yeah, that's the avak ribis.
Yeah, it's probably not ribis though, right? You see, again, we're not going to learn ribis in one day. My son, by the way, who learns in the mirror, spent a year on ribis, and then after he finished ribis, and you could test him in halacha, so a year or two went by, and he said, I got to learn ribis again. It's so complicated. But just to simplify, ribis has to be what's called ribis ktsutza. Ribis ktsutza means that the malvin, the lova, set up from the get-go, from the moment of the halvah, exactly how much is going to be paid. That's ribis d'oraisa. But then there are many, many different levels of ribis. There's something called avak ribis, and there's something called mechseka ribis, which is at a lower level. It looks to the onlooker like, you know, spectator thinks it's ribis, and so forth and so on. So let's... That's going to be sugya number one for us today. Sugya number two for us, because my goal today is to do two sugyas, is the question of... Okay. But if not, this will be akdama for the next year, Mitzvah Hashem. Is the question of Shema Shave Pruta B'Modai. Are you familiar with that concept? The man gives a fruit to a woman in a particular land, and it's not worth a pruta. I'm sorry, for kedushin, I left that out, and it's not worth a pruta. If it's not worth a pruta, gol mishvel, it doesn't have a shavu pruta, it's a shavu moment, it's not kedushin. Oh. So the Gemara says in the first parak of Kiddushin that chayshino le Kiddushin. It's a suffic Kiddushin. Why? Because maybe there's an overabundance of dates or figs, whatever it might be in this country, but Shema Shava Pruta in Madai. That if we were to take a trip to Madai, which the Arabs do, you know, annually. And, no, I'm just kidding. Mecca, Medina. And there, they don't have too many Te'enim or Tamarim. That very same Tamar might have value elsewhere. And the Gemara goes back and forth over this issue. How do you define Shavius in Mama? Obviously, you need a Shava Pruta, which is an objective element, but is that objective element limited and circumscribed by the country in which that mama was given? Or do we look at that mama from a global perspective and say that somewhere on the face of the earth it might be worth money? does the Baal have the right, the Mekadesh, have the right to say to the Miskadeshes, you know what, take a trip to Mordechai. Again, it's going to cost her a lot more to pay the camel driver to get to Mordechai than it will for the date that she'll get a pruta for Mordechai. But in any event, does that theoretically give the status of a Shavuot pruta here in Eretz Yisrael to that date that has value in Mordechai? And that's the sugya of Chayshinon Shema Shavuot pruta b'Mordechai. Okay, so let's start now. Does everybody have the place where on Daf Tzadi Zayin Omid Aleph, approximately 10 lines down, maybe 15 lines down from the top? The first one in the line is Bey, correct? Bey Rav Yosef Bar Chama. Okay, the children of Rav Yosef Bar Chama, and the most prominent of those children is whom? Anybody know of all Rav Yosef Bar Chama's children was Rava? Okay, so Bei Rav Yosef Bar Chama, amongst the children of Rav Yosef Bar Chama, have a tokif avdei the inshi demasik beizuze. So inshi demasik beizuze is a reference to the lover. Tokif avdei means they grab the eved of, right, the dalit of the inshi of, and they, in the family of Rav Yosef, they grabbed on to the Eved of the Balchov, we'll call him, of Reuven. Okay, Reuven, who is the Lover and owes money to Shimon. The Avdi Behu Malach. And they did work with him. Now again, a myriad of questions have to, you know, just flood our minds over here. Like, why did they do such a thing? And what rights did they have to do such a thing? Did the Lova give them the green light? Was he aware of it? One thing I can tell you for sure, they only did this during that 100-day period of time. Otherwise, it would mamish be gzela kehilchasa, and there would be no issue here. The chas v'sholem that in the house of Rav Yosef, they would tolerate such a thing. However, Zen Enev is a low chaser, is still what we call a moral issue. And then, in addition to the moral issue of absconding with someone's Eved, there might also be an issue of ribis. Okay, so those are the issues that we want to keep in mind as we go through the sugi. Omale Rabba Bray. Rabba is going to make a big to-do about this, a big protest. Is there any halacha that comes to mind, any mitzvah that comes to mind that should be problematic here? Kibbutz. Are you allowed to protest against your father?
Was that, you talking about Besaser or just...
He was saying Jesus, but he was saying...
Even Besaser. What? It's actually, technically, we're not dealing with Kibbutz, but what? Mora'av, right? You know, there are two mitzvahs in the Torah. There's Kibbutz and Mora'av. But one of the things of Mora'av is Shalo Yistar Es Dvara. You're not allowed to tell your father that he's wrong. So the Shach is famous for saying that in Halacha, you're allowed to tell your father he's wrong. And most of the Farshim say that even if it's mili d'alma, even if it goes beyond quoting a Halacha, but if it has to do with an action or behavior, and you think that your father's behavior is against the law, then even if you're not quoting a halacha to contradict him, you're still not allowed to do that. It's a violation of Mora, unless you do it in a very indiscreet way. For example, For example, if your father is hitting someone, let's say, you're not allowed to say, "Dad, you're not allowed to hit someone." But what you do is, you ask your father, "But what about this halacha? What about this pasuk?" So if you take a look at the language of Rabba, he says, "My taima ovid mar hachi." He just asks him, in a very neutral kind of way, what was the reason for what you did? What he was really asking him was what? Why is this legal? Is this halachically acceptable that you grab on, you take possession of the lova's eved? And at this point, I want to share with you the Rashba. The Rashba in Chidushim says that what bothered the mind of Rabba was the Isaribis. not the iser of taking the eved, because apparently within the relationship between the lov and the malva, there was no moral issue. The lova looked the other way, and did not make a fuss. Again, it was during that 100-day period of time of the malva taking the lova and taking the eved and working with the eved. Amalei. So the fascinating response of Rav Yosef to his son, he says, you know what, I'm standing on the shoulders of Rav Nachman. And just give you a little history of it, Rav Yosef and then Rav in the next generation were all Talmidim of Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman was like the kingpin, you know. The Omer Rav Nachman, Avda Nahom Krese Lo Shavya. Nahom is bread, Krese is the belly. An Eved, Lo Shavi, he's not even worth the basket of bread, so to speak, the bread that goes into his stomach. Meaning, it costs so much to support an Eved, a master, an Adon, once he's Kona an Eved. The Gemara says, Kona Eved, Kona Rabo. Right? If he only has one pillow, he has to give it to the Eved. And he's chayvin the Parnos of an Eved. The Parnos of an Eved is so stiff that it's worth more, exceeds in value than the Malach of the Eved. Now, I don't know if anyone here could tell me in what context did Rav Nachman make this statement. I don't know. It sounds like he's saying it with a krechts, meaning that, you know, it's not kedai to buy an Eved. You know, you think it's a good proposition, you know, but, you know, it's, you know, you got a cheap deal on an Eved. You know, there was an Eved sale that day. You know, they were selling, the Knanim was selling, you know, Avodim at a slash price. No, but says Rav Nachman, be careful. You know, it's not always worth it.
But no, I think he's just saying that anybody that owns an Eved that is at the moment not working, they would be happy for somebody to actually take them off their hands, destroy them, and feed them, because it would be a benefit to them. That's what he's saying. And therefore, that's fine.
Oh, you mean to say that now, if I take your Eved, I have to support the Eved, and you don't. So yes, in a sense, I'm exempting you from the Chiyu.
Saving you money.
Excellent, excellent. Let me think about
that's
that.
Not,
I didn't think about that.
That's not Zeluchasr, Zenen of Zenen.
Wait, just give me 1 minute. I just want to digest what he's saying. The Omer of Nachman, Avda Nahom Krasi Lo Shavi. That what? So I'll tell you, Michael, your pshat sounds like a great pshat. I'm influenced here by a quote from Rashi. Now, Rashi is not here because the statement of Nachman is quoted in two sugyos, here and in Bava Metzia. And Rashi in Bava Metzia says, Lo ne'nesi mimalachtam, I wasn't benefiting from the malacha, kevan sheschar ha-malachu pachos mimazonosav.
Oh, that's a different, that's not what I'm saying.
Right. So wait a minute, so let's offer two pshatim here. There's Rashi and there's Michael. Okay? Nobody laughs at that. You see, when I taught 18-year-olds, they used to laugh at that.
Okay. Say that again.
My jokes, I have to change my jokes. Upgrade.
It sounds the same thing.
Rashi's saying the following. Yeah. Rashi says that why was Rav Yosef able to justify his actions based on the statement of Rav Nachman? And the answer is lo nenesi, meaning what was Rabbah's objection to Rav Yosef? Hanah. Hanah is considered what? If the Hanah goes for the love of the Malva, ribbis. So Rashi learns that what proof text was, why was Rav Nachman's statement a proof text justifying Rav Yosef that it's not ribbis? Says Rashi, lo nenesi me'amaloch. Why? Says Rashi, because Hana is defined by the bank account, so to speak. Meaning, if the Malva has more in his bank account than what he shelled out, what he extended as a loan to the Lova, that's called ribbis. If, on the other hand, he has less in his bank account, that's how I'm understanding Rashi, that's not called ribbis. So, in other words, if on a daily basis, let's say we say Buongiorno, right? We wake up in the morning, we say good morning to the Eved, and we invite him to breakfast, correct? That breakfast is going to cost more than the malacha, than the value of the malacha on the market. So at the end of the day, if you take Rav Nachman literally, again, before we see the next piece of the Gemara, then the malva is not getting an asset. You know, it's his total assets have not increased, but rather they've decreased.
In which case you would wonder why did he do it in the first place.
Exactly. And what I'm thinking is, again, this is just as far as the nafshe, that why does a person buy an effort to begin with? I mean, it doesn't sound like a great business proposition. If the mezonos and the parnosa exceed beyond the malacha. But the answer is that a person benefits from an eved in ways that he can't benefit from a laborer. And I think, you know, a wage earner on the market, and I think those are intangibles, you know, that maybe you can translate into dollars and cents. For example, you know, I can ask my eved to scratch my back. You know what I'm saying? That doesn't necessarily have a market value. I don't know. You could probably pay a laborer to scratch your back too, but an eved is obligated to do all sorts of activities, even if they're not the most respectable activities.
He's also available 24/7.
And he's available 24/7. He's there. You know, the way Chazal envisioned the relationship between an Adon and an eved, it could be a friendship kind of relationship. The Gemara describes, you know, different avodim. Like Revi had an eved; it was called Tavi, and the only, you know, you're not allowed to be meshacher an eved. You know, once you buy an eved, that's a lifetime irreversible connection and responsibility as an adon. But the Gemara says that Revi once had a situation. You remember this Gemara Brachos where he had 9 people for a minion, so he was meshacher Tevi Avdo. Tevi was a big Talmud Chacham, so he would be the 10th man for a minion. So the Gemara asks, but the apostle says, "Liola ben Talmud, you're not allowed to be meshacher an eved." So Gemara says that Tefila Bitzibur is a mitzvah rabba. So for the sake of a mitzvah rabba, they allowed, quote, a violation of an essay, which is called the Olavahem Yavodu, for the sake of a greater essay. And that leads to the whole sugya of Dechiyah, when we apply Dechiyah, when we don't. But it seems like that. Now, Michael is offering an alternative interpretation, which I find quite fascinating, quite attractive. He's saying that what Rav Yosef was telling him was not the issue. Wait a minute, are you still working with the Rashba about Ribbis, or you're no longer talking about Ribbis?
Saying that he's done the
Lovah. No, but I'm asking, what I'm asking you is, what is Rabba trying to justify? Meaning, what was the argument, I'm sorry, what was Rav Yosef trying to go? What was the objection of Rabba? Are we working with the Rashba or not? Because if we're working with the Rashba, that the objection of Rabba to Rav Yosef was what? Was Ribbis. Then let me just think. So, no, I don't know if your upshot is going to work. No. Let's leave out the Rashba for a minute. Rashi and Bava Metzia may be working with the Rashba's premise that the issue here and Rabba's objection was because of Ribbis. Let's say that Rabba's objection was that he was absconding with someone's eved, and even though the owner of the eved has no recourse to sue him to compensate him for the malacha, but nevertheless, because then of his elochasa, but nevertheless, who says that he's going to give you permission to do so? So that's what he's answering. I'm standing on the shoulders of Rav Nachman, that I have no doubt that he would give me permission to do so, because for that 100 days, he has to support the Eved and feed him and get absolutely nothing in return. Now, that obligation is transferred over to the who? Yeah. To the Malva. Correct. Okay, very good. So we can still say Yofsh. Now, let's go on. Omar Le Rabba says to Rav Yosef, I'm still dead, not happy. Emo, the Omar of Nachman. That which Rav Nachman said was a very personal observation. He wasn't making a global statement, which would make it a very poor investment to buy an eved. Very bad proposition. He was describing his own eved. Kigon daru avde. Okay, his eved's name was daru. Is that the Eved that appears in the Manishtan over there? That sugya in Arvei Pesachim? Anyone have a Gemara Pesachim here?
It doesn't.
In Arvei Pesachim, who is the Eved over there?
It mentioned Baba
Metzia. Oh, okay, forget it. All right, never mind. There's a very interesting Gemara in Pesachim about, he asks his Eved, if I'd be Meshachar you, what would you say? So he says, I would thank you so much. He says, you parted a lot from Manish Tali. All right. So Kigon Doru Avdi, Avdo Shor Rav Nachman. Okay, so he's the Eved of Rav Nachman. And he wasn't worth that much. He was a tap dancer. The Moroccan Beikubi. You know, Beikubi are the wine, you know, the places, the saloons where they go to drink wine. You remember back in the old, what do you call it?
Casinos.
Kubi,
my dice, no? Putting in the middle of the hole.
No, Kubi dice is with a kuf, as far as I know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Kubi is a place for drinking. Kubi is a
bar.
Yeah, a salon. It's a saloon, right, or a bar. So what was his thing, this Doro? Doro is probably a Greek word, no? Yeah, he used to tap dance in the bars. And what would he elicit? He would get some free wine for that, you know? Now, I don't know if some of the wine he shared, if he had a surplus of wine, and he shared it with Rav Yosef, because otherwise, why did Rav Yosef get into it? Maybe Rav Yosef didn't check this guy out. You know, he didn't realize that he's not a real worker, you know, and he can't do the skilled work that an Eved is supposed to do. But in any event, after all, since he can't fire him because you're not allowed to be Meshachar an Eved, he's got to be Mefarnes him, so he's got to support him, and I guess he has to live on more than just booze, right? So it's going to cost him quite a lot of money to be Mefarnes this Eved. But Kulo Avdi, but as far as the general universal category of Avodim, Ma'avid Avdi, they work very hard. And the value of their Malacha by far exceeds that of what? Of the Parnasa that you have to shell out. Well, if that be the case, so again, we'll go through our two pshatim, right? So for the average Eved, it's certainly not beneficial See, now, Michael, your pshat is going to be hard for me. Well, let me go back to Rashi's pshat just for a minute, because I think maybe because I'm more used to it. So Rashi would say the following, that now you're being nene from the malva. Right? You're shelling out to pay for the Eved's parnasa, but by far you're getting a greater benefit, because the malacha is worth more than what you're paying for his food. And let me just see if your pshat will work out here for a second. With the now you're saving me the parnasa. You could still say your pshat that he's saving him the parnasa during that 100 day. Oh, so he's saving him for the parnasa during the 100 day. So what changed? Okay, I lost.
So in a way,
zenene,
they're both benefiting. So is that could still be ribbis though?
One second. He's trying to tell me. So again, why is Rav Yosef objecting here? Why is, excuse me, Rava objecting to Rav Yosef?
Well,
all of a sudden we're going to introduce Rivas. Oh, at this point we're going to introduce Rivas. Then you're going to have to work this out. Okay, fine. Let's keep going. Let's keep going.
Also, if this was a situation, what he'd do is Eved for he'd rent him out. But the fact is, he isn't renting. He's got a certain hana'ah, even though he's not working for those 100 days, that he's available to scratch his back, to do all kinds of things like this. Means he had a reason. He didn't
forfeit his ownership on the Eved.
He didn't want to rent it out either. It means he's staying with the Eved, and that was something he wanted to do, apparently.
You mean to say that maybe the Malova would have he's not happy with the fact that you is that what you're saying? He's not happy with the fact.
Under a normal situation, he would have let that Eved sit around for 100 days in his place. It's
right.
Not because he didn't have anything to do with it.
Right.
He could have. But this was his choice, and he knows I'm paying, but I've got certain privileges from the fact that he's under my possession,
right,
and
right,
not
right.
Doing work for others.
Right. So again, so why is Rabbah objecting? Because
it's ribbis.
Oh, ribid.
Yes.
Oh, okay, good, good, good. I thought you were taking a standard of ribid.
Why does it matter that Rav Nachman said that his Eved... We're saying that
why did Nachman make that statement?
It would make sense, but I'm trying to see how it's relevant to our case.
It's not. But if you ask me a different question, to what is it relevant? Why was Rav Nachman quoted as krechtzing about Nebuch his Daru Avdi? You know, who cares about who?
He had a loser Eved.
Yeah, he had a loser Eved. So Nebuch, so you got into a bad deal. What do I care about that? I thought that maybe Rav Nachman wants to point out that you should be very careful before you buy an Eved, because it's an irreversible situation. I can't just be Meshach my Eved. Hikish Bazachaba, meaning once I own the Eved, there's nothing I can do to get out of it.
You can loan out your Eved to somebody else.
But if he doesn't have any skills, who's going to want to pay that price? Meaning,
who said he has no skills? This is a case where he's sitting around for whatever reason it is, doing nothing.
Who? Rav Nachman's Eved?
Yes.
He's not doing nothing. He's dancing in the saloons. In other words, again, my question is, why did Rav Nachman have to tell me that my Eved is a performer? He's a jokester. He tells jokes in a saloon. Why do I have to know that?
I have a more fundamental question. I'm standing here.
In what context did Rav Nachman make that statement?
I think just
one second, if you want to say.
Both statements about the Eved reflect on the value of the Eved to its owner. And therefore, is there an element of ribis here? Because is it worth something? Is Eved, a losing proposition? Or does he make money in the saloon, therefore he's a making money, and he's a valuable asset? But what are those two things relevant to the guy who took him, right? Rav Yosef, who took it, to him the value is just, what did I make him do for me? He brought me value by the work I had him do. I don't care if he's the worst Eved in the world to his owner. To me, I put him to work for a day, and I benefited. There's my ribis. Why do I care what the value is to its owner? If the value is only what it is to me, I took him, I used him, I got benefit. There's the ribis. He could be someone who never works a day in his life for his owner. He's just a big schlub. But for me, he worked. And then why is that not an issue? Why do I care what it is to the owner?
Because ultimately I have no plus in my bank account. He's a loser, Evan, and I have to support him. That's not ribis.
Who's I?
In the first round that we took Rav Nachman literally, and we assume that this Eved, that Rav Yosef absconded with from his lover, was a Daru Eved, right, and that was the Havamina, then there is no benefit, and therefore there's no ribbons.
But why is there no benefit? I'm just
because, again, if he's spending more money than...
Again, he's paying for this food. You're
he's paying for his
and
food.
Famous food. And there's no way I can get enough value out of him. Okay.
Correct.
Oh,
correct.
It says the favorite.
But I was asking a different question. Why did Rav Nachman have to reveal this to me? That bothers me a little bit. Just, in Shas, when you see a statement of an Amora, it's more than just, a story.
These two statements are
not going to talk to the Sasser. Rav Nachman made one statement. Rava pointed out that Rav Nachman was only describing his own Eved. But as far as another Eved is concerned, it's a very good business proposition, because another Eved has skills, and it's certainly worth paying his breakfast. So I'm just, my only problem here was I wanted to come up with some halachic import to Rav Nachman's statement. He wasn't just kvetching about his jokester Daru. He wanted to tell us some halacha. So I was just suggesting that, once you buy an Eved, you're stuck with him. So you better check out his skills before you buy an Eved.
But that has nothing to do with Rav Yosef.
Not nothing whatsoever. That's for sure. That's
what type of tie-in is that to Rabba, to his son? I'm going with what Rav Nachman said. What are you doing? Who cares what Rav Nachman said? It's got nothing to do with what Rabba's asking you. Rabba's asking you.
No. According to the Havamin of the Gemara of Rav Yosef, Rav Nachman was making a global statement about all our fun.
And
if so, it's not ribbon. Comes along Rabba and he says, name. Yeah, that's not what Rav Nachman meant. Rav Nachman made a statement about his Fashlet David called Daru.
And you can't learn out from the Eved which you took that it's not ribbon.
That the Eved that you took,
Rav Yosef.
that Rav Yosef is Rivitz. Correct. Is Rivitz because he's got a lot more money in his bank account than what he's what he's showing. Correct. He's the Amalei. So Rav Yosef now challenges his son. And he says, I know Rav Daniel Svirli, the Omar of Daniel, Bar Rav Ktina, Omar Rav, Hatokef bi Avdo Shel Chavero vi Osa bo Molocha Potter. This is what we call Zenene Vizelo Choser. He takes the evidence of his friend and uses it during this 100-day period. His friend doesn't lose anything. And therefore, his friend, the owner of the Eved, the Adon, has no recourse to sue for compensation. Alma, and what do we see for this? From this, nicholei delo listerei avde. It's beneficial for the owner of the Eved. Again, because right now the Gemara thinks that we have to make a jump a little bit. You know, to say that Zenenev Zelo Chos is potter, and the owner of the chutz, or in this case, the owner of the eved, has no recourse to for compensation. That's not going to cut the mustard, because again, we're talking about whether you're allowed to do such a thing. So the Gemara could have stopped by saying potter and says, well, if it's potter, that itself proves that it's not ribis. Why? Because I didn't take anything from the lover, although I got benefits from the Eved of the Lover, but that has nothing to do with the Halvo whatsoever. It wasn't that the Lover is offering me a rebate on the loan, which would be Rivis, but rather it's simply a halacha of Yorid Lesoks, of Zenene Vizelo Chaser, correct? And if it's just a halacha of Zenene Vizelo Chaser, then if there's no benefits that the malva is getting that has a value such that we can attach that value to the lova in such a way that the lova is actually transferring something over to the malva, meaning if the lova would have the ability to sue the tokef, is that the word here? The tokef for rental fees, for malacha fees, and he looks the other way because he owes the malva chov, that would be ribis. But since it says that a tokef es chavero es avdo shel chavero es malacha patur, so that really the lova is not giving anything over to the malva, and if he's not giving anything of value to the malva, then the malva is not violation of ribis. But the Gemara is not happy with that. The Gemara adds another statement here. The Gemara says, Alma nichalei delo listeri avde. The Gemara is compelled for some unknown reason to add the punchline here that the lova is in fact very happy, or let's leave out the lova, we'll come to the lova in just a minute, that the Adon who owns the Eved is very happy with the fact that so-and-so was tokef his Eved. Why? Because instead of being lazy bones and out of work for 100 days, you know, and getting used to boredom, he works him.
And he doesn't have to pay for his food.
No, but I'm asking, in our context, if Rav Yosef is trying to justify the objection of Rava, that Rava says there's a ribbis issue here, why did the Gemara feel compelled to add this other statement that the Adon, in the case of a Tokef Eved, is even happy you're doing him a favor by taking his Eved and working with it?
Because otherwise the Eved becomes lazy.
Yeah, but why did the Gemara need that fact? Let's say, just erase it from the Gemara, what would be lacking here? What would be missing? Why is it part of the explanation, the Alma? Whenever you see the word Alma, you quote a text and you derive a conclusion that's crucial to the dialogue, to the discussion, what we call a Talmudic dialectic. Why is it necessary, Alma, to say that the owner of the Eved is applauding the fact that you took his Eved? Why is that necessary?
His name.
Who?
The Adon.
Why do I need that for?
Because
why is that relevant to Rivitz?
No.
Again, Rabosai, I'm going to scratch the fact that he's Nen for a minute. Okay? I'm going to explain this Gemara without the Alma. the reason why Rav Yosef is justified in working with the Eved of the Loveh is because it ain't Ribbis. Why isn't it Ribbis? Because Atokev Avdo Shalchavero Potur. Why is he Potur? Because Zenenev is Elo Chaser. What does it mean, Zenenev is Elo Chaser? The owner of the Eved was not working the Eved at that point. And therefore, he was lo chaser. It's like the chotzer in the classical case back on Daf Yutes. That's not omed liagra. It's not omed l'schirus. Vosfeld, what's
not,
missing?
Not only is he not lo chaser, he's actually
an ener. Why do I need that for? I left it out, and I still got away with the Gemara. The Gemara doesn't add anything if it doesn't add anything. If I can prove to you that Rav Yosef has responded to his son's objection, his protest, without adding, then the ball's in your court to explain
because
why the Gemara had to add
the next two lines. That he was Moises, it's Kal Vachomer, even if it's Zenene.
Okay, I don't know. I don't want to quote the other two lines yet, but I will just quote to you the explanation here of the Pnei Yoshua. The Pnei Yoshua says that Rav Yosef, that, let's start with Rabba. Rabba had a twofold protest against his father. One was an issue of Ribbis. That issue of Ribbis was completely covered by the fact that Atokev as Avdol Shel Chavero Potur, meaning Zenen of Ezelo Chosin's Potur. Rav Yosef says the Pnei Yeshua had an additional objection to his father. True, that if a person squats in someone else's chotzer and the owner of the chotzer takes no loss, the squatter will not have to pay rental fees for the chotzer, but nevertheless, on a moral level, he had no right to do such a thing. That's why the Gemara added the Alma, says the Pnei Yoshua. Because even if I drop the Ribbis issue, I still have another issue which is called Shoel Shalom Midas Gazlan Havi. When a person squats in someone's chotzer without rishus, he didn't get the green light, he is a shoel shalomidas. So again, even though the shoel shalomidas under the law of Zenen of Zelo Chotzer will not have to pay for the she'elah that he borrowed, he will not have to pay rental fees for squatting in so-and-so's chotzer, but nevertheless, he had no right to do so. What gives you, my dad, the right to go ahead and take the effort of someone else? You have no right to do that. Says the Gemara, Nichle de lo listere avde, we have an umdeno, we have an absolute assumption that no doubt the loaf in this case would be very happy, just like any owner of an Eved would be very happy if you worked the Eved during this hundred day period. Amalei, so now Rabba rejects this justification. He says, Hani Mili. Now we get back to the Ribbisug again. Hani Mili says, Hecha de lo masik bu zuzi, but mar keva de masik be zuzi, mechze keribis. This is an issue of Ribbis. Mechze Keribis means it looks like Ribbis. The spectator will mistakenly think that there's a Ribbis issue here. That the reason why the Loveh looked the other way and the Loveh allowed or permitted the Malveh use of his Eved, the onlooker, the spectator thinks that the reason he did it is just because he's a Loveh and a Malveh. Not because of the fact that Nichole de lo listere avde, it's good for him that the Eved shouldn't sit there bored, but he would come to the mistaken conclusion that why did the Lova allow for the Malva to take his Eved? Because he is a Malva, because of the loan. That becomes Michse Keribis. What's Michse Keribis? It looks like the Lova is doing a favor for the Malva because of or in lieu of the loan. That's called Michse Keribis. Notice, the Gemara doesn't call it Ribis Do Raisa. For sure it's not Ribis Do Raisa. It wasn't a Ribis Ktsutza that was built into the loan, right? Pre-calculated into the loan. Instead of receiving six and paying me six, you're going to receive five and pay me six. It's not even what's called avak ribis. Avak ribis is when you work around the laws of ribis and you let the lova know that he's going to somehow pay you back more than what you lent him. Okay, it wasn't built into the original loan, but it becomes mechze kiribis. And how do I know? Wait just one second, we're almost up to the punchline. How do I know, says Rabbah, that this is mechze kiribis? He says, the Omer of Yosef Bar Miniyomi, this is a different Rav Yosef, but again, always back to Rav Nachman, as I said, he's the kingpin. Afal Pisha Omru Ador Bechatzer Chaveru Shalom Midaito in Itzor Chalosho Schar. So the squatter does not have to pay compensation, but nevertheless, he'll vo Vidor Bechatzer Chaveru Tzor Chalosho Schar. If the squatter is the malve, and the Baal HaChotzer is the love, then in such a case, we're going to force the malve, the squatter, to pay rental fees to the love, to the owner of the Chotzer. Why is that so? After all, ha, Zenene Vezelo Chotzer is Potur. Rav Nachman never questioned that din. And the answer is, in order to avoid the Mechse Kiribis.
But I thought that's where they. That's exactly
what. Omalei
Hadri Bay. Yeah, but
I just have to fit in those last four words.
Hadri Bay is important.
It seems. Yes, but I, you know, I didn't want to make a wedge here between.
It seems like the Gemara, they preceded that by when talking about that it's during those 100 days when the Eved is without anything, and there's a benefit to the Baal Eved to have somebody else feeding him. During that period of
right, time. But that's not Mechze Kiribis.
No,
the Mechze Kiribis
is. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That is the thing that takes off the Mechze Kiribis. Because everybody knows that during that period of time, that Eved is a total loss. And when therefore, when he doesn't object to the squatter.
Right, but listen, Alan, the same thing applies to a chotzer. Why? So the Gemara explains that back on Daf Chaf Aleph, that in a normal case of someone who squats in someone's chotzer, again, it's
all, that's not
no. The Gemara says that he also benefits.
How does he benefit?
He benefits because, again, this is not going to be very contemporary, but back in the day, they believed in shaving. Or they had shaved him. Either way, I'm not going to prejudice you. You know, the Rabbeinu Avraham Ben Aram says that there was never such a thing as shaving. But most of the Rubam Shal Rishonim believed in shaving. They actually believed they existed. Now, exactly when they got rid of shaving, I don't know. But, you know, as children, again, this is American culture, but I'm hoping that even the Brits here in the audience will relate to this. There's something called the haunted house. Do you have that in Britain? Is there such a thing?
Yes.
You heard of. So the haunted house means that if you leave a house unsettled, you know, there's no one living there, after a certain period of time, the demons come in and take over the house. Now, in Britain today, I don't think there's anyone who believes in demons. Are there? Yeah, I think there are, but anyway, even in the United States, I mean, you know, you can't imagine how paganism still impacts on the Western world today, but be that as it may, there's something called leaving a house unguarded. There's no one living there.
Well, that's the point. It's not going to that extreme, but you could say, by having someone in the chotzer, you put off robbers.
Exactly. In our contemporary, say you put off robbers. Yeah. In the Gemara's time, they say you turn off the shaydim. You know, so the shaydim start. So that's what Rabbah quotes from Rabbah Bar Miniyomi, Rabbi Yossi Bar Miniyomi, that he still has to pay. Why? Because the onlooker, the spectator, thinks, even in the case of Ayore L'chotzer Shel Chavero, even though he, you know, if the onlooker was smart, if he had a little bit of insight and intuition, he would understand that this would be beneficial for the Lover, even if he didn't borrow money. But again, there's so many different factors that come into play in terms of how the spectator will view this case, that we still have to. And again, how far are we going to go with this, Rabosai? You know, that rental fees for a chotzer could be very steep. We are going to force the malve to pay rental fees in order to circumvent the problem of Mechze Kiribis. What we see clearly from this sugya is that Mechze Kiribis is a brand new level of ribis. It is an Issa ribis that has to be avoided at any cost. Meaning, what we're going to do is we're going to say that since it looks like ribbis, it is ribbis. What do I mean it is ribbis? The lova is now giving a chupar, as the Israelis say, a gift to the malva. Oh, no, no, no. We're not going to tolerate that. No gifts. There's no gratis. That gift goes beyond the halva. That's ribbis. We're going to therefore force the tokev, or in this case, what does he call it? The dar b'chotz shechavero, to pay rental fees. We're going to completely undermine and suspend the halach of zenen v'zelo choser, and I'm going to say in this case, he's got to pay for rental fees in order to avoid the problem of this. Okay, Rabosa, at least we did half of what we had scheduled.
You don't have to say it's because it is like this. It's because it's one of Zion. And somebody else would think that you're allowed to give it. Yeah, but it's not Rivas. You're not over on Rivas, you're over on Mar Zion. There's a big difference.
Follow on from one chair to the next.
Well, I'll tell you what it is. Since we only meet twice a week, if I could gather together a group that would be interested in meeting on a more frequent basis, that I would follow it through. But since we only meet twice a week, I try to find things that I think are a little bit more.
So do you give notice as to what
I could send out an email if you.
Would
you mind taking down my email address?
Sure.
You know what? I'll write it down for you.
It's lovely, yeah.
azaryaberzon @gmail.com. See if you can read my handwriting.